Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 16th of September 2012. My name's T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Rev Stan, Paul Chandler and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about Three Sisters. This is a new version at the Young Vic. The version is by Benedict Andrews, who also directed it. He's taken a rather... he's updated it, essentially. It's a rather modern take on the play. He hasn't actually changed an awful lot of the story. The story is pretty much there. He hasn't sort of changed sort of things round. You've still got the, and that makes things rather anachronistic. We've got when you have servants and things like that. But it does work very well. I found it worked actually quite well with the language. The language is very up to date and rather sweary, and perhaps a little too sweary. But it. Nothing was unfitting with the characters, I thought. You know, it was, if you know the play well, and I know I've seen this play almost 10 times now, it's every bit, every sort of beat, every sort of emotion was played out extremely well, I thought, in this, with the language. It has a very good performance. One performance I want to bring out immediately is Danny Kerrane, who was seen in one of the productions of Jerusalem and also in Boys earlier this year. And he played Andre, the brother, and I think it's one of the best brothers I've ever seen. It really made me feel his journey properly. They don't, you could really understand where he's coming from, which I thought was a nice bit about this, and it got me on side very quickly, because otherwise this is a rather strange production in many ways. The stage area, which seems to take up most of the auditorium, is actually it's about 150, I think, desks, little square desks, like schoolroom desks, I suppose.
Did you count them?
Yes. Well, no, not exactly. It's based on the fact, I think there were 15 along one row and 8 along, 15 along one way and 8 along the other way, and that's approaching 150. I think that's what it is. So, sorry.
I just think that's funny that you worked out how many tables there were.
Well, it has to be said that there are always a bit odd times. I mean, this is a very sparky piece, I thought, and I did have time to count the number of desks. It was always pretty engaging, and there was they use modern songs, which means that the song that Masha keeps trying to remember, I didn't recognise it at all. So it was a bit off putting. Sometimes it's a piece of classical music that you know that she's always trying to remember, and it keeps coming back to her. But in this case, it was just something I didn't quite recognise. Lots of people have mentioned there's a rather nice piece of Nirvana that they sing, which was effective. And as I said, in place. I mean, this is one of the clever things about this adaptation, this translation, is that he keeps the characters right. They're all right. I don't think I would have liked the language to be richer. I thought especially with Vashinin, who's played by William Houston, he's very dull and repetitive, and you kind of don't understand why Masha sees in him. Now, the Three Sisters, played by Maria Gale as Olga, Vanessa Kirby as Masha, and Garda Gordon as Irina, and they work particularly well together, and they're all about the right age for the sisters. I mean, I think even Maria Gale, who's in her early 30s, that's about how old Olga would be by the end of the play, because it takes place over sort of 3 or 4 years. It's always better when they do the versions of the Three Sisters where they get the ages right, because it I always seem to find it works a lot better. The other person I would like to point out is Michael Feast, who's a favourite actor of mine, playing Chubbuck in The Doctor. And he was very mad. I can't actually believe he could be a doctor, but I don't think Chekhov really wants you to take him at all seriously. So, Rev Stan, what did you think of this?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I know it's definitely one of those productions that is going to divide people, certainly among our party on last Tuesday. there were four of us, and two hated it, absolutely hated it. So it's going to divide. You'll either go with it or not. I've never seen The Three Sisters before, so I don't know the story. But I found it really engaging. I thought it was nice to see, having seen the old Vic's production of Hedda Gabler, and that was the first time for that play, and that was very traditional, done in the traditional costumes, and I really enjoyed that. But it was refreshing to see something of that sort of period done as a very modern interpretation. Now, it wasn't perfect. I think sometimes with these modern adaptations, there's certain elements that feel like because we can rather than because it's actually adding anything to the story. And there was a lot going on a lot of the time, and I could just about keep up and follow what was going on. But I think ultimately, even though I enjoyed it, I found it engaging, there was something... there was a little something just lost by everything that was going on the stage all the time. And it's very distracting when they dismantle the stage and the tables are constantly being taken out, and you can actually watch the audience sort of audience's eyes following the each table as it gets taken away and removed. There were odd things that I know that Paul, who's really liked the remote control helicopter, but which was sort of quite distracting, but I don't see what things like that actually add to the production. Whereas things like them singing Smells Like Teen Spirit, I thought really worked, because it was sort of, that's the beginning of the play when they're all feeling quite optimistic and about sort of their futures and where they're going. It wasn't 100% success for me, but on the whole I enjoyed it and I found it engaging. But I'd like to see a more traditional production now, just so I can get to the heart of the story, because I think that gets a little bit lost in everything that's going on.
Okay, Paul, what did you think about this? You weren't one of the people who didn't like it, and we couldn't get one of them.
Yeah, it's a shame you couldn't get my girlfriend, actually, because she spent most of the journey home explaining to me in some detail why it was rubbish, how as Westerners we could never understand what it was like in Russia and Eastern Europe at that time when Chekhov was writing, and how wrong it was that the girls were dancing on the table and spitting champagne or whatever it was over the place. And I accept her criticisms. I accept some of the other criticisms I've heard from people about, you know, it's a bit of a hodgepodge of ideas and it's not coherent. But personally, I just really, as Revstan said, I found it engaging. I just sort of enjoyed it from start to finish, really. The song, by the way, that she's singing is Golden Years by David Bowie. And I thought that was very well done. And the life and energy they put into Smells Like Teen Spirit was great. The bell ringing. Did we enjoy the bell ringing?
No, I didn't enjoy the bell ringing.
I could have gone for more bell ringing, probably.
Could you?
Yeah.
It was a bit loud for me. Yeah, it started hurting my ears. And
I just enjoyed looking around and seeing how many people had their fingers in their ears that the bell ringing went on.
I was far enough away for it not to be a bother.
I thought that's going to stick in my mind, that image of those tables being taken away. You know, I thought it was interesting rather than distracting. A friend of mine said, "Oh, I didn't like it. I'm off to light 100 candles and then blow it out again for no reason," which again is something that happens in the play. But no, for me overall, it worked. Mariah Gale probably better suited to that than playing 14-year-old Juliet, you might say.
Yep, I agree with that.
Vanessa Kirby, she was good in The Acid Test, and again, she's very good in this. And Danny Corrane, again, after Jerusalem and Boys in this, I think, you know, the next thing I see that he's in, I'll probably book straight away, to be honest. So probably 4 stars from me, and I see where people are coming from with their criticisms.
Can I just say something about Danny Corrane? I mean, I think you're right. I think he worked really, really well in this role. But I haven't, of all the roles, of the three things I've seen him in, I haven't seen him do anything really that different.
Yeah.
He reminds me of James Corden. James Corden's very good at being James Corden and playing James Corden-esque characters. And he reminds me a bit of that. I think the place that he's been in, that has worked really, really well. But yeah. I'd love to see him, for me to really sort of appreciate him as an actor, I'd like to see him do something completely different, because he just seems to be playing the same sort of character in everything I've seen him do.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, I suppose. I'd like to see him take on something with a bit more dramatic reach for him, and see what he can do in that. But yeah, I do like his work so far.
And something where he doesn't get his stomach out.
One of the things I'd like to say about the tables, I mean, I suppose the sort of the arty thing you could say about the tables being taken away is that it's their life being dismantled around them. If you want to be sort of fancy about it. I didn't really care about that. I noticed it and then just carried on.
I totally got the why they were doing it and the symbolism of it. You know, and all you're left with is a pile of mud. I mean, nobody's mentioned the mud yet. I wasn't quite sure about the pile of mud at the end and what the point of that was, why they had a pile of mud there from the start, really, because it just looked awkward for the actors having to walk over it the whole time. But no, I totally understand why they got the whole dismantling, but it just did get a little bit sort of, because I started sort of thinking, oh, which one are they going to take next, and trying to sort of predict which table, though, because they never sort of then didn't take them in any particular order. So yeah, you were counting them. I was trying to second guess which table they were going to take next.
Yeah, it's like a rubbish Jenga, I suppose.
Yeah.
Did we like the effect where the girl was left three stories high on tables at the interval? That was a bit awkward, to be fair.
Yes, and I was worried about her climbing down with the lights all out, but I noticed that she didn't climb down until the lights had come back up again, which sort of kind of destroys the sort of, you know, the illusion a little bit when you see the actor sort of leaving the stage while the interval's actually started.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Not everything works.
No. But still very good.
We're now going to talk about The Judas Kiss, which is on at the Hampstead Theatre. This is a play by David Hare about one real and one possibly imagined incident the life of Oscar Wilde. It's directed by Neil Armfield and stars Rupert Everett as Oscar Wilde and Freddie Fox as Lord Alfred Douglas, Bosie. I first saw this play when it was with the premiere cast, the first ever cast, when it opened in London, and that was with Liam Neeson and Tom Hollander. I have to say, this production was much, much better cast. No disrespect to Liam Neeson and Tom Hollander, but they are not Oscar Wilde and Lord Alfred Douglas, I'm sorry. But Rupert Everett does a pretty good Oscar Wilde. I thought he was it felt like an impersonation, and there were certain other films that he's been in that his portrayals sometimes remind me of. And Freddie Fox, very impressive and extremely believable as Lord Alfred Douglas. This play, the first scene in this play that we get is really just after Oscar Wilde's libel case, or is it slander case, against the Marquess of Queensbury has collapsed, and the evidence that the Marquess of Queensbury's legal team have produced mean that Oscar Wilde is likely to stand trial for being a homosexual. I can't remember exactly what it's indecent acts or something, I think the legal part is. And he is waiting in the Cadogan Hotel to see if he needs to leave or whether he should stand and fight. Famously his mother told him that she would not respect him anymore if he didn't stand and fight. But that isn't part of this play. Really, this play boils down to Oscar Wilde debating with Lord Alfred Douglas and with his old friend Robert Ross, who's played in this production by Cal McKinnich. The second part of this moves the action to, I think, Naples, where Oscar Wilde has retreated to after spending 2 years in prison. And we get a final scene, and really, to a certain extent, a breakdown of the relationship between Lord Alfred Douglas and Oscar Wilde, and it's somewhat believable the relationship here. They do feel like there is sort of genuine love there. But I think perhaps I don't know if Lord Alfred Douglas gets a bad rep. I don't know quite enough about his character. But he certainly really portrayed as a villain in this particular play. Now, I have to say, I was impressed by the look and the feel of it. There is lots of naked man flesh, which I don't mind, but it's not something I particularly go to the theatre for. I think it's a very solid production and some nice pieces. As I say, sorry. Yes, and some nice performances. Although as I said, Rupert Everett perhaps a little bit of a caricature as Oscar Wilde, but that I did see the first preview, and hopefully he's sort of got it. You know, he'll get his hand in, and sorry, God, I've done it again. I shouldn't have said naked man flesh. Anyway, yes, hopefully he'll improve as time goes on. This has got very good reviews. Rev Stan, what did you think of this?
I thought the pieces were wonderful. I thought there wasn't enough of that. And I do go to the theatre to see that sort of thing. No, I'm joking, sort of. No, I really enjoyed it. Like you, I felt that at times Rupert Everett's performance was more impression rather than actually really absorbing the character. But it has got absolutely rave reviews. So perhaps he's sort of relaxed into it. I think it's partly because he's very obviously wearing a fat suit. And that sort of, I found that a little bit disturbing, and that sort of added to the sort of, you know, the impersonation rather than him sort of taking on the character, for me anyway. It's a very sumptuous production in that they have this amazingly large piece of chocolate-covered velvet that is draped down the back of the stage and then across the floor, and all the sort of furniture is on the velvet. But it did cause, I don't know about when you saw it, but it did cause a few problems for the actors. And there was at least one stumble from Rupert Everett because it's all ruffled up. So it felt like they were constantly looking at where they were putting their feet and walking very, very carefully. And I heard from having on good authority that during rehearsals they were sliding all over the place. So again, that might be something that that they'll get more used to it. And I do feel sorry for actors when they're given a stage like that to work on. You know, it's not enough that they have to think about sort of acting and being in the right places and using all the props and stuff, but have to think about not tripping over on the floor or the on velvet on the floor is on top of it as well. But yeah, maybe that'll be something they'll get used to. But no, I really enjoyed it. I thought Freddie Fox was amazing. I think you're right. He just really was just nailed that character. I've seen him in a couple of things now, and I think he's an impressive young actor, and certainly someone I'm going to be looking out for. One thing I did find interesting, you're saying about the relationship between Liam Neeson and Tom Hollander. Rupert Everett is actually an old family friend of the Foxes and has known Freddie since he was five. So I think there was sort of that in the back of my mind, you know, when they were kissing and stuff. That must be so weird for those two, but they completely pulled it off. And you wouldn't believe that, you know, that there wasn't a relationship going on between them. But no, definitely worth a look.
We're now going to talk about Choir Boy. This is a new play at the Royal Court Upstairs. It's written by Terrell Alvin McCraney, whose first few plays, things like The Brother's Sighs, Red Water, The Red and the Brown Water, and were rather lyrical and sort of dealt with sort of the close relationships of people, and had a sort of a sense of the sort of the old South and a rural feel to them, and a sort of struggling against events and countryside. But he's also written plays like Wig Out, which was completely strange because it was all about these drag competitions in New York, where they have you have teams and squads of drag queens who basically do walk-offs against each other and displays to see who the best drag queens are. It was completely strange when I first saw that. This play maybe. There's a possibility that it almost feels autobiographical, and I don't know if we sort of talking beforehand said we wonder if it was. This is set in a boarding school, a private boarding school for African American boys. These things do just about exist, but obviously because of sort of anti-segregation laws, they would fall foul of it, and so they are getting fewer and fewer, and I think there are only just four now. And it's alluded to in this play. There's a scene where they suggest that they might be having to bribe the school board to keep it segregated, keep it all black. Yeah, the pride and joy of this school is its choir, and the choir leader is a character called Farris, who is. Well, he's extremely camp, and he makes a lot of people, especially the headmaster, extremely uncomfortable. And his Farris's worst enemy is another member of the cast who happens to the choir, who happens to be the headmaster's nephew. And that young man's a bit of a troublemaker. He's Bobby, and they really don't like each other, and they really don't get on. But this is really about somebody. Getting into finding out about their sexuality and coming to terms with it, and also really about the different ways that people have of dealing with somebody who is pretty clearly homosexual, although it's not said amongst the pupils necessarily. And but we get a situation where some people are extremely violently opposed to him. Other people are accepting, and they're stable with they're happy with their sexuality, and they're not interested in him. And even it's not forced, and it's handled really quite well. But we do get that sort of mix, and we also get that sort of thing of one of the most interesting things is the way the headmaster deals with it, because he is supposed to be accepting of this sort of thing, but he can't quite cope with it, and I found that a rather interesting thing. Now, this production is due to go on to Washington, I think, later, and it'd be very interesting to see how the Americans handle it. I think it's been rather well received from most of the online reviews I've seen of it so far. So, what did you think of it, Gareth?
I didn't think it was a particularly good play, to be honest. I mean, I find it very difficult to identify with the setting, this idea of what could be a British public school, but these guys are all black and speaking in modern American. It just jarred with me, really. It seemed very otherworldly and quite incongruous. So it's quite difficult to sort of get involved initially for that reason. I mean, the setting that Altz, the designer, has built is absolutely extraordinary, because he's really turned the upstairs theatre into a wood panel school. Obviously, with five pupils, you have to use your imagination quite a lot, but he quite cleverly places them in the audience at several points, so that kind of creates this illusion that we are a part of the school, I guess. But the design is quite stunning. I think my problem with the play is it doesn't really go anywhere. It's a slice of life. It discusses some interesting issues, but I just felt it spent almost 2 hours just painting a picture and not actually kind of dealing with anything or taking us anywhere. And that was the big disappointment for me, really. Having said that, there are some amazing performances. The five young men that play the pupils are all, every single one of them, are absolutely stunning. I mean, two of them graduated this year from drama school. One of them's still in doing his A-levels. One of them's doing a professional debut. Not only that, but of course they are also the choir. So in addition to acting, they sing really, really well. So it is beautifully performed, beautifully designed, and really beautifully directed. But I just feel, you know, the play isn't really worthy of all that, of all that talent, and of all that creativity. And I felt the same about Wig Out, where they kind of reconfigured the Royal Court Theatre downstairs, especially to put on the play. And it was, again, you know, a good production of just a very, very ordinary play. I did like his more minimalist work right at the beginning. I saw, I think it was Red and Brown or whatever it's called, back at the Young Vic, which I thought was a much better written play. So I kind of, I wonder why. I mean, I have a sense that we're kind of indulging a playwright who's just okay and not being critical enough about him, and giving him, you know, fabulous productions, wonderful designs, terrific cast. But is it really... is it really worthy of that? I think that's my, you know, that's my problem. Having, you know, having said all of that, you know, the I was in awe of the talent. The staging was incredibly impressive, and you know, and I was engaged. But I think I was engaged by the production and the performances, and not by the play. So that's where I stand with it, really.
Yeah, I know what you mean about that. I mean, these certainly things like the Brother Size and In the Red and Brown Water, I finally got around to looking it up, they were very impressive. And We Out was just very, very odd, and rather strange. This, I thought this was certainly superior to something like Wig Out, but yeah. I see what you mean about it doesn't really get anywhere. I mean, we're sort of told a story, and it's, you get this slice of life. It's not a major story, and it's sort of got a bit of a happy ending at the end, which is, you know, perhaps not too satisfying. I do worry, as I said, about the way it's going to be treated in America, where he might not get quite such a good time out of it. I think people might be slightly upset about that kind of, certainly that kind of, you know, the idea of that kind of school, allowing that sort of thing, you know, having that sort of thing. I think that, as I say, there's you see a lot of, you know, African Americans, certainly rap, you know, people like rap stars, they're very, you know, homophobic, and something we see in the play. And I'm wondering if there is that, there's sort of that reality, you know, there's some people in the African American community who are quite prepared to tolerate it, but aren't prepared, you know, once they come up with the reality of it. And I did wonder if that was going to be it's going to be a problem for it going on. I think it's to a lesser extent here, but you know, there is still that kind of you know, there's a sort of not so much denial in this country of that people can be homosexual. And I wonder if you've got something which is very African American that the people might sit up and say, especially in America, that say, well, it's not what we do, it's not who we are. But again, that is one of the interesting things that they challenge in there. They challenge the idea that some of the sort of the spirituals, there's this sort of mythology that the spirituals are a way of teaching you about the freedom, what is it, the Underground Railroad it was called, that helped slaves to escape to freedom. And it's sort of discussed and poo-pooed, and it's sort of one of those myths that you sort of build up to make yourself feel better. And I mean, there were one or two interesting issues in here, I thought.
Well, I agree with you, but they just don't connect, really. They don't just kind of, they're not glued together in any satisfying way. And I think you're right. I think he's actually going to get a bit of a rough ride in the US with this play. I wonder, I mean, why are his plays, I mean, I think, what, four have been premiered here first? That's quite unusual for an American playwright to find his work premiered here first, isn't it? I mean, one play maybe one could understand, but my understanding is that four of them have been premiered here, and I wonder why. Perhaps it's because plays like Wig Out and this wouldn't get off the ground in the US unless maybe they came with a bit of a, you know, a bit of a press from here first, maybe. I don't know. But it seems odd that he's getting premiered here.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are ayu-londontheatre.org, and the podcast can also be found on iTunes, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.